America's Raphael, Benjamin West. Benjamin West was known in Britain as America's Raphael. But don't worry, this didn't go to his head. He only named his firstborn son Raphael, but that's probably just a coincidence. Right? Born in the US, West claimed in Britain that he was largely self-taught. The story he told of his art upbringing reads more like an origin story of epic feats of mastery than a simple artist's training. His story was that he taught himself everything he knew after the American Indians taught him how to mix pigments. And his mother's praising kiss of a childhood drawing motivated him to make more art. Stories like this make good tales, but they really build into the idea as the artist as genius sprung fully formed from creativity's head. It's not that West's story is likely false. It is possibly true. But when you hear stories like that, take them with a good dose of skepticism and recognize that while heroes do exist, they often aren't nearly as heroic as we want them to be. Lest it seems that we are underselling the hurdles that West's early American background caused, it should definitely be highlighted that West did not present himself as a well-schooled man. He was born in Pennsylvania, and when, later in life, he was president of the British Royal Academy, he could barely spell. But it really does beg a question. How did a young artist who swore he had immense lack of access to European-type education find his way into the very highest levels of British society? Well, the answer lies in, well, lies. As Dr. Brian Zygmunt explains, in 1760, two wealthy Philadelphian families paid for the young Benjamin West's passage to Italy so he could learn from the great European artistic traditions. He was only 21 years old. He arrived in the port of Livorno during the middle of April and was in Rome no later than the 10th of July. West remained in Italy for several years and moved to London in August of 1763. He found quick success in England and was a founding member of the Royal Academy of Art when it was established in 1768. West was clearly intoxicated by the cosmopolitan London and never returned to his native Pennsylvania. West's fame and importance today rests in two important areas. One, West was a teacher. West taught two successive generations of American artists. All of these men traveled to his London studio and most returned to the United States. Indeed, a list of those who searched out his instruction comprises a who's who's list of early American artists. Number two, West was a history painter. If his role as a teacher was the first avenue to West's fame, surely his history painting is the second. Of the many he completed, The Death of General Wolfe is certainly the most celebrated. In this painting, West departs from conventions in two important regards. Generally, history paintings were reserved for narratives from the Bible and stories from the classical past. Instead, however, West depicts a near-contemporary event, one that occurred only 7 years before. The Death of General Wolfe depicts an event from the Seven Years' War, known as the French and Indian War in the United States, the moment when Major General Wolfe is mortally wounded on the Plains of Abraham outside of Quebec. Secondly, many, including Sir Joshua Reynolds and West's patron, the Archbishop Drummond, strongly urged West to avoid painting Wolfe and the others in modern costume, which they thought would detract from the timeless heroism of the event. They urged him to instead paint the figures wearing togas. West refused, writing, "The same truth that guides the pen of the historian should govern the pencil, paintbrush, of the artist." Yet, despite West's interest in the truth, there's little to be found in The Death of General Wolfe. Without doubt, the dying general is the focus of the composition. West paints Wolfe lying down in the moment of his death, wearing a red uniform of a British officer. A circle of identifiable men attend to their dying commander. Historians know that only one, Lieutenant Harry Brown, who holds the British flag above Wolfe, was present at the general's death. Clearly, West took some artistic license in creating a dramatic composition, from the theatrical clouds to the messenger approaching on the left side of the painting to announce the British victory over the Marquis de Montcalm and his French army in this decisive battle. Previous artists, such as James Barry, painted this same event in a more documentary, true-to-life style, In contrast, West deliberately paints his composition as a dramatic blockbuster. The sense of spectacle is also enhanced by other elements, and West was keenly interested in giving his viewers a unique view of this North American scene. This was partly achieved through landscape and architecture. The St. Lawrence River appears on the right side of the composition, and the steeple represents the cathedral in the city of Quebec. In addition to the landscape, West also depicts a tattooed Native American on the left side of the painting. Shown in what is now the universal pose of contemplation, the Native American firmly situates this as an event of the New World, making the composition all the more exciting to largely English audiences. Perhaps most important is the way West portrayed the painting's protagonist as Christ-like. West was clearly influenced by the innumerable images of the dead Christ in lamentation and deposition paintings that he would have seen during his time in Italy. This deliberate visual association between the dying General Wolfe and the dead Christ underscores the British officer's admirable qualities. If Christ was innocent, pure, and died for a worthwhile cause, that is, the salvation of mankind, then Wolfe too was innocent, pure, and died for a worthwhile cause, the advancement of the British position in North America. Indeed, West transforms Wolfe from a simple hero to a deified martyr for the British cause. This message was further enhanced by the thousands of engravings that soon flooded the art market, both in England and abroad.